DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
It's kind of interesting to watch how the national media is talking about Georgia right now. I think that this is a scenario in which the Bulldogs are starting to kind of form a bit of a perception, and obviously one of the things we do here on this program from time to time is sort of bring that perception to you, and I think it goes a long way towards determining how we kind of feel about things and the way they're going with Georgia. Georgia wins against Tennessee on Saturday. The margin of victory is once again relatively robust, but there was a sense in which that maybe Georgia didn't show everything that it was capable of showing, or at least what Georgia fans hope the Bulldogs are capable of showing, and maybe there's either, you know, some more stuff left in the tank for Georgia, or just a spark kind of missing that could keep Georgia from being part of the college football playoff, the national elite here. An example of that is Mark Schlabaugh, ESPN.com, who has Georgia ranked very high in his college football playoff rankings. He's got the Dogs at, what, fourth right now, I guess, on his list. But ahead of him, actually, let me show you what he says about Georgia here first in terms of the criticism of Georgia from Mark Schlabaugh, ESPN.com. At least not criticism, but maybe a little skepticism, maybe the better way to say that. Schlabaugh says that Georgia's still didn't seem to be firing on all cylinders versus Tennessee. Schlabaugh writes that UGA's offensive line is going to have to play much better to win at LSU in 2 weeks. So kind of an interesting challenge from Schlabaugh to the Georgia offensive line of whether it's pass protection, whether it's opening up more holes in the running game. Schlabaugh says if Georgia's going to win against tough opponents on the road against top five ranked LSU, for instance, there's going to have to be a better performance from the Georgia offensive line. And this is one of those things where I don't know. It almost seems like maybe this kind of thing is a good thing for Georgia. You know, I think one of the things that fueled Georgia last year was the idea of the revenge tour, the idea of vanquishing opponents that had beaten Georgia in 2016, vanquishing opponents that had talked trash before the game. Think about Chauncey Gardner, for instance. Think about the situation before the Mississippi State game, Gus Malzahn before the SEC championship. There was a lot of fuel that fired up Georgia a season ago. Thus far, through five games, for the most part, other than, I guess, whatever Deebo Samuel may have said or not said about DeAndre Baker, this season, for the most part, has been absent most of that. It's almost, for Georgia, kind of been, I hate to use this word because it's going to come across the wrong way, but it's almost kind of been a boring season in that the margins of victory have all been very comfortable, and yet Georgia hasn't had that moment where it's really had to grit its teeth and really had to show what it's made of. Those games are coming. You know, in a couple of weeks, the schedule for Georgia gets much tougher, as we've been talking about here around Dog Nation. But for the most part now, Georgia has been kind of allowed to sleepwalk its way through a season. So maybe this is an example in which Georgia needs the national media here. Maybe the national media, national writer like Mark Schlabaugh calling out the Georgia offensive line saying that group's got to play better. Maybe this is the thing that does fuel that group to bow its back and bear down and show a little bit more of what it's made of here. Maybe highlighting and accentuating some of those kind of things brings a little more emotion into the games, because it does really seem like that thus far there just hasn't been much emotion surrounding Georgia football here. You know, you had a game on Saturday, which most fans, at least a lot of the students, felt comfortable leaving the game before it was over, because while Georgia may not exactly have been, you know, walloping Tennessee the way that some had hoped, Tennessee was also no real threat to win. Middle Tennessee State game much the same way. Missouri never really got all that close. So maybe, you know, national writers challenging the Georgia offensive line to get better and be careful about LSU that looms as a dangerous opponent. Maybe that's the thing right now that Georgia needs. Who knows? Kirby Smart did address some of those offensive line issues when he spoke to the media on Monday, though. The notion that the pass protection hasn't been good enough, the notion that this group still leaves something to be desired, he addressed that subject head on. Here's what he had to say.
You know, I don't know that it's an individual problem. I mean, I think it's a total effect. I mean, we had a couple good pressures against us against Middle Tennessee. Again, we saw Nadas in a one-on-one situation that he lost, and then, you know, Isaiah gave up one on the other side, and we just got to win our one-on-one battles. I mean, it's no different than a corner getting beat by a receiver. So, you know, what do? You go back to the drawing board and go get better. You don't scheme up some new thing, because at the end of the day, there's going to be four or five one-on-one opportunities. You got to win your one-on-ones. And our guys, we're going to challenge them to do that. And we know that when we protect the passer, we're really efficient. We're an efficient team. We can make big plays. We got explosive players. We got to win our one-on-one battles, because if we're good in the run game, good in play action, and we can convert on third down, you're hard to stop. But at the end of the day, a lot of the times we've stopped ourselves more than somebody stopped us. And we'll work hard on it and try to get better at it.
So I think it's interesting that Curry talks there about the notion of winning the one-on-one battle. That's obviously partially true, but I also believe that offensive lines work together as a unit. I think we saw last year when Ben Cleveland came in as a starter after what I guess it was the Auburn game on the road that Georgia had lost, when he became one of the starting five, I think the other four got better. This is a position group that I think is about chemistry. I think the defensive secondary can be like that too, but I think offensive line is definitely a position where chemistry matters here, and the presence of one new starter can change the fortunes for the other four. And obviously, right now, Georgia has not really been at full strength, and with its offensive line, for the most part, since the first game of the season. Andrew Thomas leaves the South Carolina game with injury. Ben Cleveland leaves the Missouri game with injury. And since then, Georgia's having to be kind of, I don't want to say piecemeal, because Georgia's still very deep in talent along its offensive line, but it hasn't had the same level of talent that it expected to have at the beginning of the season. Plus, I think there are some young players for Georgia, maybe like a freshman like Jamari Salyer, who was a summer enrollee, or a freshman like Trey like Cade Mays, who's been in the starting lineup, who's had a chance to kind of come in and compete, that we may see more from this group over the course of the season. We may see a new freshman young guy emerge here and give Georgia a chance to have that same infusion of talent, much like a guy from Cleveland a year ago. But pretty clearly, the offensive line is in the spotlight when you pay attention to what a guy like Mark Schlabaugh writes for ESPN.com. Then there's something else that Schlabaugh kind of pointed out in his same piece there at ESPN.com with his power rankings, they also find it's kind of interesting. It's sort of off the subject of the offensive line, but it's something else that Georgia's going to be dealing with here. I saw where Schlabaugh had Notre Dame ranked a spot ahead of Georgia on his power rankings. So the truth is, I alluded this a moment ago, I don't remember if he had Georgia 5 and Notre Dame 4 or if he had Georgia 4 and Notre Dame 3. That's somewhat significant if you think about four teams making the college football playoff, but whatever it was, he had Notre Dame a spot ahead of Georgia on his list. Now, ultimately, Mark Schlabaugh is not, you know, the czar of college football, so his individual opinion alone is not going to matter all that much. But the thing about Schlabaugh's writing here that I do think we ought to pay attention to is, as Georgia continues to travel through its 2018 season, expect to see a lot more of this kind of stuff of comparisons between Georgia and Notre Dame. Notre Dame, because it beat Stanford a week ago, all of a sudden now they're going to become a bit of a national darling. And you understand some of this. Obviously, Notre Dame's got a big, huge following. They're fans in all 50 states of the Fighting Irish. And it's been a long time, since 2012, that they've really been in the significant national championship picture. There was also no Midwest team in the college football playoff a year ago. Big Ten champ didn't make it. Alabama made it as a second SEC team over Ohio State, the Big Ten champion. I think there's a desire here to make the college football playoff in 2018 a lot less Southern. Last year, you had three teams in the Deep South. You had Clemson, you had Alabama, and you had Georgia as the SEC champion to go along with Oklahoma in the college football playoff. That's three teams from the southeast part of the country here, and if the playoff committee, the selection committee, can avoid that, I think that's something they're going to do. Now, when you think about getting two SEC teams in, which the loser of the SEC championship game, whether it be Alabama or I'm going to presume Georgia, whether it be, you know, one of those two teams, the notion of getting back to a possibility of two SEC teams in the college football playoff is going to be very relevant by the time we get to November and December. I think you're already starting to see some battle lines being drawn and some coalitions starting to form of, maybe let's hold off on having quite so many teams from the South in the playoff. Let me give you an example that proves my point. On Friday, the national radio host you may have heard of, Colin Cowherd from Fox Sports, was talking about why he doesn't talk more about college football on his radio program anymore, and he flat out said that he just thinks the sport has gotten too Southern. This is very interesting when you start to think about how Georgia might compare to a Midwest team like Notre Dame for that playoff positioning once the committee starts announcing its rankings here in a couple of weeks. Here's Colin Cowherd, I think, setting an agenda that a lot of the rest of America is going to follow.
College football has gotten too regional. I'm occasionally asked by fans, you used to talk so much more college football. And I say, yes, I did, when it was less regional. Once a sport gets local or regional as a national host, I can't talk it as much. The last 10 national championship games, see a pattern. The highest rated game is the one I didn't read. 2014, Ohio State beats Oregon. No Southern team. That's the highest rated. Folks, the South will always watch any college football. It doesn't matter who you put in big games. They live, breathe, eat, and sleep it. Buckeyes, Oregon, SC, Texas, the South loves college football. The West has more pro teams. They will not watch college football unless they have representation either from a Pac-12 or a Big Ten team, Michigan, Ohio State, that they have played in the Rose Bowl for years and have huge fan bases out here. This weekend you have two games. Notre Dame's in one, Ohio State's in one. They need to win. It's important. The sport is getting lopsided.
So listen, this perception, this anti-Southern perception that may grow around the college football playoff, I think impacts Georgia more than it does a team like Clemson or a team like Alabama. For Clemson, they're in the ACC. That's just an easier league to win. They've also been in the last three college football playoffs. They've essentially become one of the blue bloods here. They don't have to fight against this perception quite as much. Alabama's not going to have to fight against it quite as much either because I don't know if you've noticed this, but Nick Saban's on ESPN these days more than Stephen A. Smith. They've kind of got a pretty cozy relationship with ESPN right now. I don't think you have to worry too much if you're an Alabama fan about ESPN going to bat for you when Saban shows up on every TV show all the time here and makes, you know, a lot of insidery access to reporters like Chris Lowe and things like that. It's Georgia here who is still somewhat the party crasher after breaking into the college football playoff a year ago. And the only way I think to fight against the perception that it's better for the sport to have a team like Notre Dame in the playoff as opposed to a team like Georgia is to leave no doubt. Mark Schlabaugh challenges the Georgia offensive line to get better ahead of the game coming up against LSU. I think that's a really good idea. The pass rush continuing to improve. I think that's a really good idea. Getting the flow of the offense going better with Fromm and Fields and everybody else involved. I think that's a really good idea as well. That's how Georgia's going to get this thing done here in 2018. If it does return to the college football playoff with a lot of distaste out there for multiple SEC teams maybe being in the mix, the only way to do that is to be so convincing in all your wins. And Georgia's got some big games coming up. At that point in time, it becomes foolish to argue for any team other than UGA or maybe any team other than two teams from the SEC. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, on the radio at noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form on podcasts, wherever they can be found, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcast Player, the world-famous DogNation.com. Thanks for being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And speaking of Marco's Pizza, you know we love Marco's Pizza around here, and you will as well when you take advantage of the great offer on the authentic Italian quality pizza. Every store, every day, the Italian way. Say hello primo by going to marcos.com and getting yourself two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each. No promo code to remember, no coupon to clip, just great, great value on great, great pizza at marcos.com. Two medium, two topping pizzas, $6.99 each. We'll get Jeff Sintel coming up here in just a moment, as we do every single Tuesday. For now, though, let's go around the doghouse, and it's brought to you today by our friends at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in beautiful Towns County, Georgia, right there on the banks of Lake Chattoog. I'm going to tell you coming up about a great offer you have a chance to take advantage of and a great giveaway opportunity. So listen on that coming up here in just a moment. Before that, though, let me talk more about some of the things that Kirby Smart had to say yesterday, in particular about one of the things that I thought was a real bright spot for the Georgia offense on Saturday, the emergence, especially late in the game, of Georgia running back Brian Herrien. I've always been a believer that Herrien was a guy that has proven in limited duty that he can play, and if he ever played more for UGA, I always felt like he had a chance to really show a spark. We saw some of that from him on Saturday. Spin move, making guys miss, moving chains, ending a game and putting a game on ice, in which maybe it got a little closer than some dog fans wanted in the second half. Does that mean more is to come for Brian Herrien? Well, Kirby Smart certainly threw some compliments his way when he spoke to the media on Monday. Here is Kirby on Herrien.
I don't know that it would be a progression for Brian Herrien, because Brian's been really consistent since being here, in my opinion. You guys only get to see the finished product on the field, and you go off results and you go off stats, where I'm going off the body of work for two springs where I've seen this guy. The run he made where he spun off a tackler, I mean, that's a common occurrence in spring practice. He makes guys miss in the hole. He's quick. Brian's a good runner. I mean, I don't think it's been a progression. I think it's been, since he's got here, he's a good football player. He's really been an asset for our team on special teams, and he got to make the plays that counted the other day. He provided a spark and juice that sometimes he doesn't get an opportunity to because he's on the sideline. And when he's out there, he did a good job. And I thought he took advantage of his opportunities.
Georgia right now sharing a lot of carries, putting a lot of running backs. I think the ultimate pecking order is still yet to be decided. And I believe based on what we saw on Saturday from Harry, and he's still very much in that mix. And I, for one, hope against Vanderbilt on Saturday, we see Harry and also getting plenty of chances to show himself and plenty of carries there, because more of what he provided to Georgia in the second half, fourth quarter against Tennessee, I think Georgia could use a dose of that against Vanderbilt and everybody else yet to come. So nice to see Brian Harrion in the mix there. And, of course, great to have Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa sponsoring our Around the Doghouse feature here on this particular Tuesday on a Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, you know it's not too early yet to start booking your fall leaf getaways there at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in the beautiful Northeast Georgia Mountains. It's also a great time to go, especially when Georgia's away. You know, when you start thinking about some of these road games coming up and a bye week coming up for UGA, that's a great time to get to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, especially when you think about Brassy Sports Bar, which is a perfect place to watch the game or any other games that may be happening around college football on that particular Saturday or the NFL or anything else. You can also enjoy some fantastic amenities like the 18-hole championship golf course, beautiful spa, horseback riding, and so much more. And I know many of you kind of get in the doghouse this time of year because you spend so much time watching football. Well, here's your chance to maybe get out of the doghouse if you can win our giveaway here from Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, because right now they're going to be giving away a lucky winner, a four-day, three-night trip to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa for two that includes spa treatment, stable trail rides, two rounds of golf, car, and more. What an unbelievable giveaway. What an unbelievable trip. And the way that you can register to be a part of it is very simple website to remember. It's getoutofthedoghouse.com. Dog, of course, spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. Getoutofthedoghouse.com. I'll give it to you one more time. Getoutofthedoghouse.com. You can go there and register, and you can be a part of the great giveaway. It's great to have you with us here today on a Dog Nation Daily. Good luck to you on that contest. For now, though, let's turn our attention back to UGA recruiting and talk to our buddy Jeff Sintow.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
It's a Marlowe's Tavern tell-all time here with a Jeff Sintel on Tuesdays on Dog Nation Daily. And as I said before to our video audience before our broadcast began today, this is one of those very special, I guess you'd say, Marlowe's Tavern tell-alls, because there is a lot to tell coming off the big weekend of visitors in Athens on Saturday. And Jeff, let me first of all say good morning to you. Thanks for your time here on this Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. Hope you're doing well today.
Hey, Brennan, man, I'm great. I tell you what, that's clever promotion to get out of the doghouse weekend. I think there's a story there somewhere about how the Georgia gentlemen, fathers and husbands of the world, spend that off week after they've driven home Georgia football, college football, college football, college football, these special 15 weekends a year.
No, I think you're exactly right about that. That's always a balancing act that we're all trying to figure out, you and me included on that. And obviously, Jeff, your weekend was spent kind of tracking down a lot of these recruits, and you wrote a great piece at DogNation.com already this week about the official visit for the four-star safety, Lewis Cine, a guy that we've always believed has some affection for Georgia, but Georgia not the only school competing for his services right now. I guess, Jeff, would you mind giving us a little bit of a thumbnail for how you felt and how Cine seemed to feel that his official visit to Georgia went on Saturday? You wrote in our forum at forum.dognation.com that he certainly seemed to be entertained while he was inside Sanford Stadium, but the visit goes on beyond that. How did you see it all playing out?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to think about there. I guess I can actually say that Lewis Cine was drinking the red Powerade at Sanford Stadium on Saturday, because he literally was drinking red Powerade on Saturday at Sanford Stadium. You know, there's some takeaways from that. I know Brandon always searches with his Sherlock Holmes kind of looking glass to kind of see all the juicy little clues. And, you know, besides the things like him getting ingrained and enjoying the Georgia traditions or meeting Herschel Walker, man, he looked up to that dude, took a picture, and he's like, how in the world can that guy be that put together at that age? He didn't think it was possible. But I wonder if you read that story on the Intel yesterday, Brandon, where he talked about, you know, not just his affection for Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker. I mean, those guys are million-dollar recruiters and coaches. They should be great recruiters. But what did he ascertain from conversations with Nick Williams and Bakari Rambo about playing the safety position at Georgia? Those are guys that did that less than a decade ago, and he struck up quite a kinship with those guys as well.
Yeah, it's amazing how Rambo has had such a big impact on a guy like Sean. It really speaks to his future as an important part of this Georgia program here, because I know in previous Centel Intels when you've written about Lewis Sean, Bakari Rambo is always one of those names, and once again, the most recent example, another case of this, one of those examples where Sean's relationship with Rambo is almost as significant as any other tie he seems to have to Georgia right now.
Yeah, Rambo and Williams is much that way, the same way, and he also with Shedeur Sanders, who was also there and definitely came out of that visit feeling very strongly about Georgia as well. And I thought there was one interesting little piece that I thought maybe a quote that I tucked in the intel that kind of stands on its own if you're looking for the thumbnail. He asked his father what he thought of the visit, and Andre Sine, who's a big Boston Red Sox fan from Boston, he said he loved the visit. He enjoyed it. It was a very, very good visit. And he hoped that he would get the chance to come back again to Georgia. And I let that one resonate along the airwaves and the Facebook live stream for a second.
In our Facebook comment section, Mike Massey says, I want Sean bad. He attacks when he tackles. He's my number one that I want. Matt Rukavina also adding to that, imagine him and LeCount playing together, because that sort of attacking, flying towards the ball style, that's a lot of what Richard LeCount's showing on the field right now. And Jeff, comments like that from our Facebook audience, an example of how Sean, I think he has grown in stature with the folks of Dog Nation here as of late, because he does have pretty eye-popping stats. I want to say he had, 20-something tackles in a game earlier this year. He does have, you know, that good-looking film where he can be seen really electrifyingly flying towards the football and playing a very physical brand of safety. It's amazing how popular he has become. I guess the uncommitted players who seem to be teetering the closest to maybe making a decision sometimes have a tendency to see their popularity skyrocket. But in this case for Sean, I get the impression that it's more than that.
Yeah, it's funny. He's kind of a hybrid, and he said that the Georgia coaches even identified it that way. He's maybe the smart, intelligent, processing safety that can line his guys up, like J.R. Reed, another former Texan. But then he's also kind of that guy that wants to bring that hit-stick mentality like Richard LeCount. Now, nothing against J.R. Reed and Richard LeCount III, because they are both all SEC potential is written all over them, and perhaps all American potential this year for J.R. Reed. But it's just the Georgia way of having two guys that are pretty stinking good at doing what they do and then trying to recruit someone that can maybe do it a little better. And I'm not saying that Lewis Sean can do it better, but what he can do, if everybody saw him standing on the sidelines at Sanford Stadium, with or without a 500-millimeter lens, they needed to know that this kid's 6'3", about 190 already, and he is at least 2 inches taller than either LeCount or J.R. Reed as well. And length and size and physicality and intelligence, man, that kind of stuff gets the Georgia coaching staff mouthwatering about their secondary and their back end players.
Go check out your local Marlowe's Tavern, wherever you may be in the Atlanta area. Right now featuring chef specials created with apples from Georgia Apple Company. We love this locally sourced ingredients being used by the chefs at Marlowe's. And the latest example that is from Georgia Apple Company. It's three family farms that get together and produce these apples, and they taste oh so good. Georgia Apple Company was formed in 2014, and they've got over 50,000 apple trees on these farms here. And at Marlowe's Tavern right now, you can get some great chef-inspired items from these apples that are only offered during the peak season of August through December, and that means they are extra specially fresh and on your plate in Marlowe's. That'll be the exact same way there. We're also really excited about being at Marlowe's next Tuesday, a week from today, for another edition of our Dog Nation Big Game Preview as we get ready to talk about Georgia going on the road the following week for the Dog Nation Invasion. We'll be previewing all that, the Marlowe's at Northlake. Our first time being at the Marlowe's in Northlake. It is a week from today, next Tuesday. We are really excited about that and can't wait to have all of you come out and see us at the Marlowe's at Northlake next week. Cannot wait for that. Jeff, let me turn my attention back here to UGA recruiting just for a moment and talk about Tyreek Stevenson here. I want to get back to the visitors who were in Athens on Saturday. Before we do that, let me do something with Stevenson, because I saw a couple of interesting tweets about Stevenson that I thought were kind of interesting. One actually comes from him. If you're watching on video, let me show you this on the screen. David Fornes, I don't know how you say his name, but that's a reporter that caught up with Stevenson. And Fornes initially tweets that Stevenson had Georgia at, let me see that some more of that, please, if you don't mind, that Stevenson Clemson has Georgia as his leader. James Coley came out to watch him on Friday, and then he's attending the Miami game this past Thursday. But then Tyreek Stevenson comes on top of that with his own tweet to say that Miami and Georgia is my top two out of my five, but I have no leaders at this point. That's Stevenson trying to clarify something that the reporter said that he was reporting that Georgia being his leader there. What do you make of that clarification from Stevenson? What do you make of the overall status with Stevenson in this pursuit by Georgia for 2019 here?
I think that basically simply, Brandon, was a misinterpretation by the reporter in the field right there. If you listen to the question that's in the tweet there, David, the Ferrones, who covers South Florida, I believe it's for Rivals, and he basically misinterpreted a Stevenson's answer to the question where he's like, where does Georgia have you at right now? And he said, and Stevenson said, paraphrasing, that I'm number one. And I think that was a abbreviated question and an abbreviated answer on where Georgia sees him on their board. So I think that's where the number one designation came from, and that's where all the confusion arrived about, and that's why the dream chaser himself, Tyreek Stevenson, saw the need to quickly clarify that tweet. Because if you talk to him as many times as I have, very careful about trotting out, you know, maybe a hesitation about who's a leader and who's ahead or who's gaining steam. It just really seems that, to me, this could be a top two for forever because it's always those two, Miami and Georgia. And Tyreek even tells me that he doesn't take the time to figure out a 3, 4, and 5 yet. Now, there's some schools that are chasing him because he is the nation's number five cornerback prospect. No clarification there at all. It's really just the two with Georgia and Miami. Those are the only schools he's been to so far. And for a guy that's hoping to enroll early or hoping to get his decision done by December, he's not leaving himself a little time to grow fond or affectionate towards any other schools. And I guess the tantalizing thought for Dog Nation and the viewers today is we just spoke about Lewis Seen, a guy that who definitely he's got all those skills, 26 tackles, 16 tackles. Lewis Seen has even blocked two field goals this year. Very rare to see that out of a skilled guy like Seen. And then you've got Tyreek, who, you know, both of these guys are definitely candidates for our midseason Eddies, which we will debut on Before the Hedges tomorrow on the Facebook Live Before the Hedges Dog Nation program. And those Eddies are, you know, maybe one of these two might qualify for best film or most wanted prospect at this point of midseason as we start handing out those Eddies, those blind squirrel trophies from Before the Hedges on Dog Nation.
Yeah, that's going to be a really fun thing to do on Before the Hedges tomorrow afternoon. It's every Wednesday at 3 p.m. And tomorrow we are giving away our Eddies. It's sort of, as Jeff said, kind of our mid-year recruiting awards here. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to do. So make sure you tune in 3 p.m. on Wednesday to get a chance to see that. And, of course, as I said, here's a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Tell. Don't forget to see us next Tuesday at the Marlowe's in Northlake for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview, looking into the Dog Nation Invasion. By the way, before we're done on today's program, I've also got some more information about the Dog Nation Invasion coming up here that you're going to want to make sure you hear, especially if you're making plans on being at the game. Jeff, let me shift gears here for a moment and talk about another Florida prospect here. Not great news coming out of the camp of Ryan Trouble Davis, as was reported by the Orlando Sentinel here and really been kind of all over the internet after that. We'll show you on screen here. Chris Hayes in the Orlando Sentinel reporting that Ryan Davis tore his ACL or has the ACL injury, going to be out the rest of the season. This is obviously really disappointing for, once again, another big-time Georgia recruit after dealing with this kind of stuff a year ago on the injury front with their recruits. Georgia dealing with the Davis injury here. What can you tell us about Trouble's injury and kind of what that means for him going forward here?
Yeah, it's funny. One of the things that didn't show up in yesterday's intel on Lewis Seen was just how impressed and appreciative he was how, after Ryan Davis's injury, Georgia not only didn't waver in their interest in their commitment, the mutual commitment from Trouble, but they said, okay, now your season's done. And Brandon, this injury actually happened about 10 days ago. It happened in the previous game. And then he goes to Georgia, and he hears from Georgia, the coaches basically say, hey, man, can you get your credits in order to enroll early? And that way you can do most of your rehab here, and you can get your surgery done in Athens. This is a similar path that happened with Aziz Ojulari and Zamir White. And that's something that's right up Trumbull's alley right now. He's going to work to do that. His plan is to get his credits in order and for him to enroll early at Georgia, have the surgery, and be under the rehab of Georgia's watchful doctors as he gets ready to bounce back from an ACL. He said he told me he tore his meniscus and he tore his ACL, and he was in Athens this weekend. He didn't make it for the game. He arrived a little late, but he hasn't had his surgery yet, so he was walking around a little bit with those injuries and everything else. So that was one thing that Shane told me that just really impressed him, the way Georgia, they showed even more attention and love and appreciation for him and his ability and wanted to take care of him and was really concerned about his future and maybe the best path for his future, getting him at Georgia earlier so he can rehab and come back better and bigger, faster, stronger than ever. And that was something he definitely put in his mental Rolodex as well about the Bulldogs.
I just think that's a huge thing. If he could get a chance to be an early enrollee and get that medical treatment from Georgia as opposed to kind of outside the program, which is no disrespect to some doctor somewhere, just, Jeff, as you know, in terms of the science of up-to-the-minute, you know, injury recovery, we know Georgia is very good at that. They're a state-of-the-art facility. They're state-of-the-art science backing up all of their sports medicine stuff here. And I think in any situation, a player like Davis or anybody else, they're just going to be doing better under the watchful eye of Georgia there, I think.
It's weird, Brandon. I know no one looks at things like this way. And Trumbull has been a kind of steadfast, Georgia is his leader, the team to beat, for like 4 or 5 months back in April to July, late July, when he made his commitment. But I think when a young man has the surgery done in Athens and he's already under the care of some of the specialists that service the Georgia team, and he's planning on rolling early so he can rehab in Athens, I think that takes all the doubt about whether there's any chance of anybody flipping a guy like Ryan Davis or anything else like that.
Yeah.
That's kind of not a grant in aid or a letter of intent, but it seems like something a little bit more lasting about where he's going to end up playing college football.
All right, I think that's a really good point. Let me squeeze in a final note here. We talked about Sean off the top, but that wasn't the only big-time visitor there. There were a lot more. Kind of give me, I guess, your overall thoughts on just how the weekend went for Georgia and, you know, anything that I didn't ask you that you feel like you need to talk about. I was going to ask about Hazelwood, and I kind of skipped over that a moment ago. Just your overall thoughts about how you thought the weekend went for UGA there.
Well, I think it went great. A lot of recruits had their first exposure to a game day atmosphere inside Sanford Stadium, and they loved it. Those that have been there before, they told me they marvel at the conveniences now of the West End Zone. If someone is hot, if somebody wants to get themselves a red Powerade or another bottle of water, it's really easy to do so. I wonder if all the fans that were there early for the pregame saw the special way Georgia went about treating the latest Jaden Hazelwood visit. Jaden was plucked out of the line, kind of enveloping the stadium, the home sideline and the home West End Zone sideline of the stadium. And he was given very special attention. Cortez Hankton was there, and he brought him out to the end zone, and they were watching Georgia's receivers go through their paces. Very good sources tell me that Jaden Hazelwood felt a lot of love. Obviously, you also have names like Clay Webb who showed up. Max Johnson, the four-star junior quarterback, showed up. There was a Alabama commitment in Javier Morton, who is currently committed to Alabama, that goes to Stevenson High School in the 2020 class. And it was very interesting. One more sub-point on Hazelwood is everyone that was supposed to represent Georgia and press the flesh with the five-star receiver showed kind of swung by that area where he was. That was the Torrey Johnson, Justin Schaefer, his boys from their Cedar Grove High School state championship days. And also that quarterback, besides running around the field for two touchdowns against Tennessee, he managed a way to get those legs over to where Jaden was as well. And those guys had their own moment there as well. So Jaden Hazelwood returned to Georgia. I know the folks that like to worry about that young man's status with the program a lot, and those are the most current updates I can share with you on that situation going forward.
And I know a lot of Georgia fans were saying on our forum and other message boards that, you know, he was showing some love to Georgia with his some photos on Instagram. I think his presence in Athens on Saturday, Jeff, may have calmed down some of this. Ooh, is Hazelwood looking around? Is he still solid to Georgia? You know, I told you even off air a few days ago that I thought it was important for Hazelwood to get to a game, considering the fact that he's been, you know, seen on these other campuses here since the seasons began. You know, being at Georgia I thought was crucial. He was there. He had a good time. I would think that he saw some things he probably would have liked, and some opportunities where he may be able to fill in and really do some big things for Georgia as a freshman in 2019. And it seems like whatever anxiety and tension there was about Jaden Hazelwood, at least from the temperatures that I've been able to take, some of that seems to have calmed down here as of late.
Yeah, I would say so. And it was also, you know, just a lot of kids that showed up, got to see Georgia. You know, I think the scene is the biggest story because he was the official visitor. You saw his buddy Shadur there as well. You saw Max Johnson. You saw Brock Vandegrift, the very talented 2021 quarterback that wouldn't even have to leave Clark County. He was also there, a very big, impressive athlete already at the quarterback position with a good arm from Prince Avenue Christian. He's also in the class of 2021 as well. And there were a lot of guys there out there checking out Georgia, as they should be. And what was, you know, it's easy to see that, considering the star power of guys like Sean and Hazelwood and Clay Webb, that was another great day for Georgia on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. All right, Jeff, before we let you go here and wrap up our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, tell us about tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern time, the first ever Eddies, as we give out our version of the Grammys or the Emmys or the Oscars. Tell us how the Eddies is going to go tomorrow at 3 p.m. on Before the Hedges.
Yeah, we're going to have a few things. I think we're going to have a category maybe where we do something like Best Dressed, where we give that to the Bulldogs so far on Dog Walk so far during the 2018 season. We're going to have things like the you know, the most valuable recruit at this time, the surprise recruit. We're going to have we're going to make sure that our viewers will get a treat out of seeing some a golden touch placed on the importance Eddie the Blind Squirrel at Dog Nation World Headquarters in that studio. So Eddie's going to get a lot of camera time, I guess, on Wednesday from Dog Nation and our Facebook live stream.
Yeah, our audience may get a kick out of seeing that. Eddie will, of course, be jealous because he can't see anything. But nonetheless, Jeff, thanks for being with us here on Dog Nation Daily. Don't forget our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. Marlowe's right now featuring those great apples from Georgia Apple Company, a great, great farm. Local folks, you know, 50,000 trees that they make the freshest apples available from August to December. And right now, the chefs at Marlowe's using those and a lot of menu items. So check those out at the Marlowe's closest to you, and we'll see you next Tuesday, a week from now, for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview at the Marlowe's in Northlake, our first time being at the Marlowe's in Northlake. It's a rooftop Marlowe's. I am really excited about that. Jeff, thanks for being here on the Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. We appreciate your time. Thanks for the update on the Centel Intel yesterday at DogNation.com, and we'll look forward to speaking to you on our program again very soon.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, really good stuff there from Jeff Centel. Of course, always looking forward to being with him at 3 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow on Wednesday for our Before the Hedges. It's presented by Kroger, and Jeff and I love talking the recruiting there. We always have a really good time doing that. We'll look forward to seeing you as a part of that tomorrow. For now, though, let's transition. Let's do our SEC Through. I want to talk in a moment about something kind of interesting that's happening for Georgia in both of its polls, AP and coaches poll, here in just a moment. Before that, though, let me deal with something that I did not really deal with yesterday. On the heels of the Texas A&M closer than it should have been win against Arkansas, I guess Jimbo Fisher's getting a little grief here. We'll show you the video that somebody captured on from ESPN on their broadcast of Fisher really kind of coaching hard, giving some tough coaching to a player, and grabbing his face mask to do that. That's kind of turned into a thing so much more so that Fisher's had to defend himself on this, telling reporters this week that he understood what was going on, the player. He says, because I told him, listen, I can't lose you. You're our team leader. You're our team captain. You're our leading tackler. You call all the signals. I was just trying to get his attention to keep him back in the game and not make a critical mistake and lose him the game in a second. I was not trying to berate him. That's Jimbo Fisher talking about what happened there. And you know, this is, there is such a generational divide on stuff like this. There is such a you know, old school versus new school approach in some of this. I think you're seeing some criticism come from too Fisher on something like this that I don't really get. Now, listen, I don't want somebody grabbing me by the face like that, but I'm also not a football player in the SEC. I don't know that's a necessary tactic to make football players better necessarily. Does Fisher regret doing that? I guess privately probably does. I'm sure his bosses probably gave him a little bit of a talking to of, Jimbo, we're paying you a lot of money here, and we're trying to keep this train on the tracks. This is an unnecessary distraction to the program. I would probably say this is the kind of thing that Fisher would have been better not doing, at least having it be as public as it was. But I also don't think it's that big of a deal either. And I think that there are always people kind of looking to, you know, put football on trial here and football coaches on trial. And I think that Jimbo Fisher may be the latest example of that. I don't have a big deal with this. I don't have a huge problem with it. But I think it's kind of funny that it's sort of turned into a thing. My guess, though, is that Fisher won't be yanking these face masks quite as much anymore. That may have been a situation where his temper and his volatility kind of got the best of him. All right, I wanted to look at both polls here for a moment because I think there are a couple interesting things kind of happening with the polls right now. Let me start with Georgia here, who does come in at number two on both the AP and the coaches poll for this week. But when you look at Georgia number two, one of the things you see in both the coaches and the AP poll, there are programs rated below Georgia who've gotten first place votes. Right now, Georgia doesn't have one. Alabama still gets the lion's share of the first place votes, but Clemson's gotten a couple. I think Ohio State's gotten one first place vote in both polls. Obviously, Ohio State, that comes off the steam of beating Penn State on the road. That's certainly a nice thing to see if you're an Ohio State fan. That's what they're going to get on that. Clemson, just from the status of having been there for a while, which we're going to touch on a little earlier. So we're kind of in an interesting situation here where Georgia's rated number two right now, but the team's rated below. Even Clemson on the heels of a not-so-impressive win after Trevor Lawrence got injured against Syracuse on Saturday, they're getting some first-place votes while no one else is while Georgia's kind of not. That's kind of an interesting thing to see here. I talked about national perception of certain programs and SEC perception of certain programs a moment ago. Thought it was interesting in the coaches poll that right now LSU is at six, a spot below where it's rated in the AP poll. Ahead of LSU on that is Oklahoma. Now, listen, ultimately the polls themselves couldn't matter less because they're not an official part of the college football playoff formula anymore the way they were during the BCS era. And yet, how do you get Oklahoma ahead of LSU right now, given the fact that LSU was impressive once again on Saturday and easily dispatching Ole Miss, got big wins against Auburn, big win against Miami, and yet conversely, we haven't seen Oklahoma at its best in quite some time. It was a lucky overtime win against Auburn a couple of weeks ago. I should say Army a couple of weeks ago for Oklahoma. You had the 10-point win at Iowa State. Even this Saturday against Baylor, this past Saturday against Baylor, Oklahoma a little more trouble with the Bears than maybe you initially should have thought. It's been a while since we've seen the best of Oklahoma being rated ahead of LSU right now. From my perspective, doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. I also think it's interesting to still see Auburn in the top 10 here, given the fact that it's also been a while since we've seen Auburn be at its best, seemingly, closer than I think Auburn fans would have hoped against Southern Miss on Saturday. But they're, what, 8 in the AP poll right now, 9 in the coaches poll, in both polls ahead of a Kentucky team right now who comes in at 13 in the AP, 15 in the coaches poll. And what's interesting about this is if you polled, I think, most Georgia fans right now and said, which game are you more worried about? Now, I'm not telling you this is the accurate representation of what's actually going to happen on the field, but if you poll Georgia fans right now and say, which game are you more worried about, at Kentucky or home versus Auburn, I get the impression, based on the chatter I was just hearing kind of walking around Athens a bit on Saturday, that there is a little more anxiety maybe about the upcoming game at Kentucky than there is Auburn. And that may be too much recency bias because Auburn hasn't looked its best lately and Kentucky's been on fire. But as of right now, it is Kentucky that seemingly has the steam, although poll voters on both the coaches and the AP poll continue to favor Auburn there on that. And then one final poll point to get to, and this pains me to say, I don't like doing this, but Florida not being ranked in the coaches poll at this point probably is a little bit of a slight against the Gators. Now, listen, I love slights against the Gators, and I would love to see them not ranked in either poll. But let's be honest here. I can't tell you by memory who the full top 25 is, but Florida has just pulled off a feat of back-to-back road games in the SEC. Even if Tennessee's not really good, to go on the road to win easily at Tennessee and then the following week to follow that up within a desperate situation for Mississippi State, go in and smother that Bulldogs offense, win that game. That's a top 25 performance. And, you know, I think that LSU-Florida actually shapes up this Saturday to be a pretty tough football game. So I ultimately think I'll be proven right on Florida and they won't be very good. But in the snapshot of the current present tense of what's happening right now, ranking Florida in the top 25 seems like probably the right decision, although the coaches poll does not do that. I do, as I said, think that Florida-LSU on Saturday is going to be pretty interesting and will make that your SEC through. And speaking of LSU, one of the things you're going to hear me talk a lot about coming up in the days ahead is what's going to happen the following weekend for our Dog Nation invasion to Baton Rouge. I am so excited about this, and I want to allow all of you to also make plans to be there with us. For those of you who are going to be there, you've said, hey, BA, when are you going to tell us where you're going to be? When are you going to tell us about everything that's going down for Dog Nation invasion? Well, for those of you who are making plans to be a part of that game, big party, big game, what looms huge for Georgia, ranked number two right now against LSU, as we said, ranked number five in the Associated Press Poll. If you're going to this gigantic game, here are a couple different ways that you can interact with Dog Nation next weekend for the Dog Nation invasion to Baton Rouge. In fact, let me show you these on the screen right now for those of you who are paying attention. First of all, starting on that Friday, it's October 12th, that Friday, for a happy hour broadcast, we are going to be at Manning's in New Orleans. It's right near the Harris Hotel and Casino there. We're going to be at Manning's on Friday. It's 519 Fulton Street for a broadcast that begins. Now, we debated a lot yesterday about how to kind of explain this for Eastern Time Zone, which is where we are right now, or Central Time Zone, which is where we're going to be then. I'm going to try to give both of these to you so you can kind of help make sense of all this. On Friday, October 12th, the day before Georgia takes on LSU, we're going to do a very special happy hour broadcast at 3 p.m. Central Time. That's 4 Eastern, 3 Central, 4 Eastern, at Manning's, a really cool sports bar in New Orleans, 519 Fulton Street. And then the next day on Saturday, our gigantic Dog Nation Invasion tailgate is going to be live at Walk-On's. That's where we're going to be for that. It's another cool sports bar very close to Death Valley, just short walk to a Death Valley. It's 3838 Burbank Drive in Baton Rouge. That's going to get going at 11 Central or 12 Eastern for those of you who are keeping up with that. So if you're going to be in Baton Rouge on Saturday, in New Orleans on Friday, come by a couple different chances to see us. We're really looking forward to that. And a huge thanks here to the sponsors who are making this possible, including our friends at Kroger, Marlowe's Tavern, our buddies from R.S. Andrews, and Skyland Brookhaven. All of those sponsors making Dog Nation Invasion possible. And I'm really looking forward to hanging out in particular with our good friends from Kroger. Our folks from Marlowe's going to be there. Dari from R.S. Andrews is going to be there as well. Really good folks from Berkshire Hathaway there who present Skyland and Brookhaven. They're going to be there too. It's going to be a gigantic, super fun event. You can see us Friday at Manning's on Fulton Street starting at 3 p.m. Central, and then Saturday at 11 Central at Walk-On's there in Baton Rouge. What an unbelievable event that's going to be. Now, of course, before Georgia can get there, it's got some business to take care of on Saturday. And I think that, you know, we'll spend a lot of time this week talking about that night game coming up against Vanderbilt, a chance to, you know, see a big crowd in Sanford Stadium and check off that final box of final tune-up game, figuring out what's going to happen to a certain extent at the quarterback position, figuring out a bit more about that pecking order at the running back position. We talked about that with Brian Herring a little earlier. And then all systems pointing towards the great Dog Nation invasion two Saturdays from now. I cannot wait for all of you to be a part of that. For those of you who are going to be there, we hope to see you as a part of some of our events taking place in New Orleans and Baton Rouge. All right, with that said, let's get ready to wrap up today's program. In 25 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville again for our Gator Hater countdown. We believe that Georgia's going to get another win in Jacksonville. 25 days from right now, it's our Gator Hater countdown right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marcus Pizza. Really excited about that. Something I'm not excited about, you know, I didn't want to spend, you know, a whole bunch of time on the show here today because it's just a depressing subject. But, you know, obviously you can go to dognation.com. You can read the report from Chip Towers about the investigation going on with the Georgia baseball player who's been alleged to have said some really terrible things at the Georgia football game on Saturday. I really don't know, you know, what has gone on with this, but it's obviously been now, you know, widely reported, including Chip Towers there at dognation.com. Just hopefully this is the kind of thing that can, I guess, be quickly resolved here, because this is obviously not Georgia in its best light, and I certainly hope for better stories to talk about when it comes to Georgia in that regard. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.